Good afternoon. I call the Water Division to order at 12:46. We do have a quorum present. First item on the agenda is the approval of the minutes. Is there a motion to approve the minutes from the last, from the February 24th meeting?
I read the minutes, Mr. Chair. I would move the minutes. Sorry, Michael, you're out.
Representative Heintzman moves the minutes from the February 24th, 2020 minutes meeting. Are there any corrections? Hearing none, all in favor of approving the minutes as presented, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Aye.
Motion is approved. The only item we have on the agenda today is House File 3595, Representative Torkelson's bill on Minnesota River Basin. Representative Torkelson, I know that you do have some work to do on it, but would you at least like to, let's get your bill moved, and then we can have it laid over for a future meeting date then? Does that sound acceptable to you, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 3595 be held over for possible, further action.
Yes.
Further action, let's say that.
That sounds great. Okay. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. If you'd like to go ahead and start your presentation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and welcome, members. Water storage, water retention is a topic that has been receiving more and more attention in a variety of ways. The bill that's before you is some language that was drafted actually by the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and Ms. Kudelka will be explaining that in more detail when she comes up to testify. But really what I'm looking at today is a chance to really expose members to this issue and what some of the potentials are for water storage in Minnesota to improve water quality. The big advantage of, that I see of looking at this possible action or set of actions is that it has multiple good benefits. Number one, if you can slow water down, you can potentially reduce the impact of flooding. And we know that this year already we are hearing a lot of talk about the potential of flooding across the state. In fact, I was talking to some of the folks down in New Ulm in my district. The Minnesota River in New Ulm, as we speak, is at the highest recorded level ever in all of the time that they've been taking records for this time of the year. You know, it's not above flood stage, but yet it's a precursor to the potential of flooding. So we know there's lots of water out there. We had heavy rain. We had a wet fall. We've had a fair amount of snow. We don't know how fast it's going to melt or how much rain might come along. But the fact that we're dealing with more water more regularly is pretty obvious to everyone. Just look at the number of disasters, water-related disasters we've had in the last 10 years, and that's pretty obvious. In addition to the possible impact on flooding, of course, when you slow water down, the particle matter drops out. So if you've got suspended solids in the water, if you can slow it down and hold it even for a short time, a certain amount of that will fall out of the water and be deposited wherever you're holding the water. That's a good thing. Less turbidity downstream. And finally, of course, nutrients are a big issue, of course, and while some of those drop out with the sediment, you also, in the case of nitrogen, when the water stands, it also evaporates some of that nitrogen. So all these are good things. I've been working off and on with one of my constituents, Scott Sparlin, and he's going to come forward and talk about his efforts to really bring this topic forward and to develop support for the topic among the community that he works in, especially a number of environmental groups. So I welcome Scott to the testifier
okay.
table.
Welcome, Mr. Sparlin. If you'd like to introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Yes. My name is Scott Sparlin. I'm the executive director of the Coalition for a Clean Minnesota River and the facilitator coordinator of the Minnesota River Congress. You should have received a handout, several handouts. One of them is the various organizations that have participated in the Minnesota River Congress, and another one is the to-date support that we've received for moving forward with legislation to store more water on the landscape and best management practices such as soil health and so on. that will also mitigate some of those circumstances that arise when we get 100-year events every 5 years. With that, I'd just like to read to you what we have been sending out and has been well received by, as you see, the various support entities that are already on board with this notion and this idea. So I'll just say to the members and Mr. Chair and members, we've reached a water management crisis in Minnesota, certainly not limited to anywhere in the state, but especially evident in the Minnesota River watershed. Due to land use practices, both urban and rural, we have now reached the point that if we do not begin to both temporarily and permanently store more water, we will continue to experience increased collective societal and business losses at an unacceptable rate, putting many Minnesotans at risk. Exacerbating this condition is the climate trend and future prediction of increased rainfalls in short periods of time. The combination of all these factors leads first to small and medium stream bank erosion. The dislodged sediments combined with increased flows enable sediment and nutrient delivery to our lakes, major tributaries, main stems, where they then flow downstream all the way to the Mississippi, Lake Pepin, and ultimately the Gulf of Mexico. We are a water-blessed state, and the time to invest in a major water storage initiative is upon us. The compelling data concerning the need, especially in the Minnesota River Basin, has been thoroughly studied and is well documented. The fact is, most of society has observed and intuitively known this for some time. We have engineered ourselves into this condition, and we also have the technical know-how to mitigate it. We now need the commitment and the significant financial resources to accomplish the goal. In many cases, our government, all of us, have paid to create the challenges that we are faced with. The time is now for us to come together for the greater good of future generations of Minnesotans. This is not an investment we can ignore, or we will pay much higher prices in short years to come. So having said that, I would also like to just give you a quick background on how we've arrived at this point. Back in 2014, the then Minnesota River Board, made up of 37 county commissioners in the Minnesota River Basin, disbanded. And when they disbanded, it left a void. It left no one at the helm, no one in the state. They turned it over to the state and said, okay, we've worked on this for 20 years. Now we should do something. And they didn't want to do anything at that point. And I have a lot of good friends that are county commissioners, and they will tell you the same thing. But since then, since that void was created, that's what started the Minnesota River Congress. We met and have been meeting for years since then and discussing the various options that we had and our grassroots attempts to do things positively and to influence various entities to participate and do things. And that has brought us to now. All of these meetings that we have had through the years, and we've had many, many, many meetings, we finally started to solicit our good friends at the SWCD level to ask them, what do you need to get this accomplished? And it was a resounding, we need ways that we can get at funding, significant funding, that will store water on the land. And so having said that, and having heard that throughout the entire basin, we held meetings in the upper part of the basin, the middle part of the basin, the lower part of the basin, and over and over and over it was said to us, this is what we need to do, this is what we need to have, and give us the tools and we can get it done, because we know of projects right now, many, many projects that are good, and we know that there's not enough money. So having said that, we felt that we should take a grassroots approach to this, and I've since contacted my esteemed legislator, Mr. Representative Torkelson, and he agreed to meet with me. And we have had several talks about water storage, how it should be approached, and you know, we've come up with some ideas, and we need this to be taken seriously moving forward. This should be raised on the level of priorities as the endorsement letter that I talked to you about states. This is something we cannot ignore. So with that, I would be happy to take your questions and appreciate the opportunity to come in and speak to you today on this most important Minnesotan issue.
Thank you, Mr. Sparlin. Do we have any questions for the testifier? Hearing none at this point, thank you, Mr. Sparlin, for stepping forward and speaking. Next, I will call up Ms. Carrie Jennings from the Freshwater Society. If you could identify yourself and start your testimony, please. Oh, just
Mr.
a moment.
Chair,
yes,
Representative
Torkelson.
Just mentioned that one of the first changes that I would intend to make would to make this a statewide program. While Mr. Sparlin works mostly in the Minnesota, exclusively in the Minnesota River Valley, this issue is one of statewide significance. So when we get around to amending this bill, one of the first things we're going to do is make it a statewide perspective. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Thank you, Mr. Representative Torkelson. Ms. Jennings, if you'd like to introduce yourself and please start your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Carrie Jennings. I am Research and Policy Director at Freshwater. But over my career, I've worn many hats, and for 24 years, I was a mapping geologist with the Minnesota Geological Survey and drove every road and canoed every stream in the Minnesota River watershed. And I can tell you that over that 24-year career of mapping, followed by about 10 years of studying sediment loading to the streams, that the Minnesota River has changed significantly. The Minnesota River is growing, and it's growing because of increases in precipitation over the basin. It's growing because of a change in vegetative cover, which returns less water to the atmosphere. And it is growing because of the drainage that's required to do agriculture in the Minnesota River watershed. I don't want to ever maintain that we need to get back to an original state to restore the river to something that mimics an original condition. But what we do need to do is acknowledge these are prime agricultural soils, some of the best in the world. When I've taken people to this watershed, other geologists from around the world, they can't believe how black the soil is and how thick the soil profile is. They just see this as a resource that is unrivaled. So we would be irresponsible to not be using this to produce food for the people of the world. However, in order to farm this soil, we do have to drain it. If you've ever killed a pot of plants by overwatering it, like I have, it's because if you don't have drain holes or if you overwater a plant, then you're going to rot the roots off. And this is the condition that occurs in this watershed. These are heavy soils that retain water. They also make it hard to get into the fields at times when you need to plant and when you need to harvest. So lowering the water table is something that farmers find essential. However, what we've learned from the lowering of the water table through ditching and tiling is that that increases the peak flows in the rivers themselves. And so if you turn, I'm referring to the simple figures on this handout, the Minnesota River is Growing handout, which shows you the increasing precipitation and the change in water balance in watersheds, mainly in the Minnesota River, due to those three different factors I mentioned. If you turn the page, you'll see that this has direct impact on people living in the watershed. Last week, I was down in St. Peter addressing a group of senior citizens at the History Center. And I had to say to those 78 to 80-year-olds that, yes, it's not your imagination. The river has changed in your lifetime. In St. Peter, on the right-hand side of this graph, which is blue jagged lines on the bottom and black on the top, those are the widths of the rivers over time. This is the width of the Minnesota River from St. Peter down to the confluence with the Mississippi. And in St. Peter, it was 50 to 75 meters wide when they were born, and now it's 150 meters wide. This isn't just inconvenient. This isn't just affecting individual property owners. The state has invested significant money to try to keep Highway 169 on the highway roadbed instead of in the Minnesota River itself. I saw that there's a bill in the legislature this session to invest $4 million to try to keep Mankato's well from being eroded and eaten away by the river. So we have expended significant state infrastructure to try to accommodate these changes that we've seen over the 30 years. So it's a much simpler and very diffuse approach to just keep the water where it falls or as close to where it falls as possible. This can be done by providing farmers with a menu of options for how to store water on their land. They might not, maybe some will say, I don't need to tile or I can restore this marginal wet area. Even if they don't accept that as a solution, they might be willing to do other things like increase their soil health and the infiltration capacity of their soil so that water soaks in more quickly into their fields. Or they might be willing to dam a ditch nearby and keep water temporarily in the field, put in subterranean storage. There's a lot of options that could be offered to them, and this bill just establishes a framework for how the money could be sent to those regions with what kinds of match. And I would echo support for this expansion of the program to other watersheds. Although the Minnesota River is the main contributor of water and sediment, nutrient-laden water and sediment in the state, it is much like the South Fork of the Crow, the Cedar, the Cannon, I feel sorry for the downstream communities, even in the Zumbro and the Whitewater and the Root River, because they're seeing increased flows as well. And if you're a community on the downstream end of this, you don't know what to do. You're really stuck. And I would say that the farmers also realize the impact to their shipping capability in the growth and sediment storage in the Minnesota River, especially the lower Minnesota, because they rely on the terminals, the barge terminals at Shakopee, to get nutrients to them and to get their grain to market. And currently, that's the part of the river that is being impacted the most by the increased sediment loads. So I strongly support this bill, as does all of us at Freshwater and our members. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jennings. Any questions for Ms. Jennings? None? Thank you very much. Any comments you'd like to add at this point, Representative Tarkelson?
Well, of course. we've got all day, right?
Not quite, but another hour.
Well, no, we'll try to keep this concise, but I'd like to thank Ms. Jennings for emphasizing agriculture. You know, I'm a farmer by trade. Farm drainage is critical to productive farmland. So my objective in this work is not to inhibit adequate and appropriate farm drainage, but rather inhibit its impact, negative impacts on the watershed. And that can be done, I believe, and we're going to hear more about that as we go through the day. I would just also point out that the increase in rainfall, many of us believe, is the major driver here. The increase in rain is just really dynamic and dramatic. We were in Ways and Means this morning. We were talking about the emergency fund that Representative Pawlowski is supporting more funds going into. And they were talking about the work that's being done in Southeast Minnesota. They are now rebuilding or have rebuilt water retention facilities down there in the river watershed, and they're building them to the 500-year event level just because the 100-year events are coming, I don't know, with much more regularity. So if these structures are going to be effective, they really need to overbuild them compared to what we built in the past. The other thing I'd point out is the transportation forecast came out today, and which isn't part of this hearing, but we were talking about a project down at 494 and 35W where they're going to build a new flyover ramp. The project is expanding in scope, not because of a change in the road, but because they have to deal with the drainage issues. They weren't properly scoped when the project was first designed. It's going to add tens of millions of dollars to that project to handle the amount of water that not just comes off the road but becomes off of the surrounding landscape because it's been developed so dramatically in the last 40, 50 years. So drainage isn't just a farm issue. It affects all of us in every landscape here in the state, and really probably more dramatically here in the metropolitan area than it does in greater Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chair, let's have the next testifier.
That sounds great. Mr. Rich Biskey, if I'm saying that right, if you'd like to come down and introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Rick Fiske. I'm the Freshwater Program Director for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota. Nature Conservancy is a nonprofit conservation organization. We work on water and drainage issues throughout the U.S. And so Representative Torkelson was just mentioning the Root River. So I manage watershed projects down there for 10 years. And so we recognize in the need for improved water management and not just kind of edge of field and water best management practices, but one of the drivers behind all of this is altered hydrology. So we speak of flooding and the damage that it causes for erosion, but it's really exacerbating a lot of the issues that we have throughout Minnesota. And it's particularly related to nutrients and in-stream sediment, nitrogen and phosphorus to downstream waters. We keep hearing about these intense rain events, and so how we manage this is one, the situation has gotten worse, the condition of our river systems, but also our lack of storage within the landscape. Fortunately, and this bill allows for this, but we're so supportive of it, kind of the flexibility to address these regional issues. We've learned so much over the past more than a couple of decades in developing conservation and storage practices that work with the agricultural system and not solely against it. So both in identifying critical areas, but also diffuse storage and the benefits that come from it. So we can use this, this bill will allow us to raise the profile of really a serious issue, but to deploy these kind of new practices that we have across Minnesota. And I think it's really important that we do recognize the Minnesota River obviously is one of the major contributors here, but this isn't unique to the Minnesota River. Throughout southern Minnesota, including parts of the Mississippi headwaters, and I'm sure we'll hear about the Red River, but it's also an economic issue. So conservancy research throughout the U.S. has shown that a dollar invested in floodplain and storage today will avoid $5 worth of cost in flood damage in the future. And so it is a cost savings measure in how we do this, and there are multiple benefits associated with it, not just in damage reduction, infrastructure, but also water quality, habitat, and other benefits. We appreciate Representative Torkelson's leadership on this and the work of Scott, and we definitely support this and its expansion across Minnesota.
Super. Any questions for Mr. Biskey? Thank you, sir. Next we have on the agenda Ms. Leanne Buck from the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. You'd like to go ahead and introduce yourself.
I was going to say good morning. It's good afternoon. It's one of those days. Again, welcome. Thank you so much. My name is Leanne Buck. I'm the Executive Director for the Minnesota Association of Soil and Water Conservation Districts. And we do want to thank Representative Torkelson and the Board of Water and Soil Resources for elevating the water storage issue. We have, and again, also thank you for this opportunity to speak to the bill. We're probably a little bit nuanced. It's also kind of what you do and how you do it. So as we looked at the bill, again, I guess the first thing that I want to say in context is soil and water conservation districts will and continue to address water storage. I'd like to think that there'd probably be a lot worse scenarios out there if it weren't for the history of soil and water districts and other local government as we continue to look at storage. But we also have statutory authority that allows districts to work with private landowners on both water quality and quantity, and we do it on a voluntary basis. And we also acknowledge, though, that we do need to accelerate the water storage. Recently, our board of directors, in response to grassroots local resolutions submitted by our districts and also voted on by our membership, what we did was we convened a work group to assess existing SWCD programs and practices and also looking at what we can do to expand the toolbox. So our water storage group, and I guess this is what's big to me, I think at some point in a bill you might want to think about how do you define water storage? Because if you think about, is it flood prevention, is it emergency, what scale, scope, and some of those things to think about. But again, we looked at it as intentional retention and detention of water on or in the landscape. And again, as I mentioned, districts have been doing water storage practices. So when we look at it, we realize the activities take place over many spatial and temporal scales. So when you think of water storage, what do you visualize as water storage practice? So for districts, our niche has been we look at created or restored wetlands. We look at water and sediment control basins, some specific practices on a farmer's field or landscape. And then we also look, and I think it was previously mentioned, within the soil. It could be something as cover crops, reduced tillage, no-till farming systems, and those type of activities that provide some for the landscape to absorb and infiltrate some of that water quality. So again, you're looking at fast and short-term, long-term, and you're also looking at various scales. So what we looked at when we saw this is what we want. We realize that we also need to have these practices that are installed in a in a large, significant way of these impacts if you're looking at multiple practices. So when we assign water districts to address this issue, we're looking at technical assistance with the landowners and the farmers. We're informed planning, conservation practices, multiplying those on the landscape, and accelerating the existence of state cost share. Again, we look at it a voluntary way. And we're also looking at new approaches or options to possibly easement programs. So in general, to quote one of our members, we don't necessarily need a new program. We need a very orchestrated implementation strategy that includes technical expertise and financial assistance. So from our viewpoint, this bill creates what we're a little concerned about with the bill, and again, we having it at a bigger level, and we know there's going to be larger discussions on it, but we feel it's a little vague right now on what is being established and yet requires an agency to review and analyze local projects as well as review sites, requires additional documentation, requires local match, and provides agency, state agency staff. And again, I think as we look at that in the future, those are some of the things that, you know, again, we've got some flexibility with our existing programs, and so we want to make sure we don't lose that flexibility with existing programs. So our members are focused on certain conservation activities in the name of storage, and we don't necessarily see it as that we have to have it completely a new programmatic effort, but we say there's a lot of existing programs that we can look at and learn from and tweak. So in the short term, there's potential for increasing state cost share program could be an option. Again, we look at this as possibly future bills or session law. So I do want to acknowledge that our members are recommending one of the things that's popping up to think about is maybe a future RIM-like program. We know there is the current Reinvest in Minnesota program that does wonderful things for wildlife and has a way of storing water on the landscape. But we also know there might be different options, as Rich and some of the other individuals talked about in the river, other parts of the state. They're looking at how do we look at possibly flowage easements and different easements that would have some storage capacity that might be slightly different than how you design something for wetlands and wildlife. So again, we acknowledge there are other ongoing efforts by responsibilities of local authorities and state agencies related to water storage. And we do, again, we really want to say we do appreciate that water storage is getting elevated. We're seeing it on the landscape. We're also seeing some of the benefits of what we've currently done, but we'll continue to do and continue to need to do as the precipitation grows and some of our land use activities change. So with that, I just want to say thank you. And again, we're here to help provide solutions and, again, look at easements and or the conservation practices. And this is kind of the niche and the strategy for our association.
Sounds great. Any questions for Ms. Buck? Hearing none, thank you so much for coming to testify today.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Yes, Representative Torkelson.
If I can just piggyback on Ms. Buck's remarks a little bit. You know, farmers generally know how to farm, and we spend a lot of time making sure that we do our farming practices well. What we don't know so well is how to fix our riverbanks and our stream banks and how to deal with these water storage issues. So the SWCDs are invaluable in the work that they can do and should do in helping with this particular issue. And I look forward, I've already gotten quite a bit of feedback from them prior to today, and I look forward to continuing the conversation and making sure that we utilize this really valuable resource for farmers and landowners here in Minnesota.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. I agree with you of the value of the soil and water conservation districts. Can you explain just exactly how they're funded properly or improperly?
Representative Torkelson.
Just exactly, Mr. Chair, Representative Sundin. Just exactly, it's never been the same way twice, I think, is about exactly what it's like. It's been challenging, as you know. We've used clean water funds. We used clean water funds temporarily once. We used clean water funds more permanently another time. We've tried to, when Representative former Representative McNamara was chair. We tried to get built into the budget, and that got kicked back out the next years. It's been a real struggle.
Bertha Sundin.
Boy, do I have a bill for you.
You have the money, Representative Sundin. That's the question.
Ms. Buck.
Chair, I guess what I want to comment on in regards to this bill, again, I think that's our challenge with anything. We're very conscientious that we don't want to make another programmatic effort because we're doing grants all over the place and using existing infrastructure. At the same time, there are some basic programs that are relatively easy for the districts to administer. It's our cost share program, and it's been, you know, again, flat for projects. But again, we're looking at that as kind of a streamlined process. So whatever we do, we don't want to create new mechanisms and oversight and the agencies. There is a lot of flexibility existing statute that the districts have on that local resource professional. So we want to garner that flexibility and make sure that we're not hampering it by a state level oversight. So we're trying to balance both of those things as we go forward.
I appreciate that, Ms. Buck. And I know that there's been work done over the past couple of years trying to streamline the whole RAP TMLD process, et cetera. And I think this is kind of building more onto that process is taking a look. How do we do this more effectively, particularly addressing the water storage issue? Representative Torkelson, it looks like you have more to add.
Well, I was just going to, I don't know who you have next on your testifiers list, but I would suggest you bring up Mr. Sipp next and leave Bowser for last.
I am very open to accommodating the agenda like that. If Mr. Sipp would like to come down, please. Mr. Sipp, if you'd like to identify yourself, who you're with, and then please start your presentation.
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Robert Sipp. I'm the Executive Director of the Red River Watershed Management Board, and we're based out of Ada up in the Red River Valley. Just want to talk to you a little bit about how we deal with floodwaters and how we manage water up in the Red River Basin. So the Red Board's been around since 1976. We were actually authorized by the legislature back then. We've been around just about 44 years now. We've done about 60 projects with our member watershed districts. We're a joint powers board of 7 watershed districts. There are 11 watershed districts up there. And so we've done those projects jointly with those member watershed districts. And we do have that taxing authority that was authorized that I mentioned. We do have a well-vetted funding process, and I believe 3 or 4 fact sheets were given to you here this afternoon. I know there's a lot of reading material there. But nonetheless, we have a well-vetted funding process that's been around for over 4 decades. We also have another process. It's called the Flood Damage Reduction Work Group. And when our member watershed districts are doing projects that not only do water storage but include habitat features or water quality features, they can go through that process as well. So we have kind of a 2-to-3 phase a process that our members go through. And then there's also the statewide flood hazard mitigation funding process that our members can tap into as well. But regarding benefits of watershed storage, we really look at it as our projects are protecting public and private infrastructure, especially in cities. But then outside of cities, we have a lot of work to do. We've done quite a bit of work protecting the Minnesota side of the Red River Basin with the work we've done with larger cities, some of the smaller cities, regarding protection of those infrastructure benefits in addition to transportation and public drainage systems. But like I said, there's a lot of work to do in protecting agricultural lands, private drainage systems, and then other private investments. You've heard earlier too that projects can be large scale, small scale. We'd like to look at them as them being multi-purpose, where we're not only focused on flood damage reduction, but then including habitat features, and also water quality features. And coincidentally, my board just going into this year, we do have some funds set aside for water quality, and that's a first ever initiative that my board is moving forward on. We also have some projects that have come forward to be funded through the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, and not so much on the Clean Water Fund side of things, but I believe we've had 3 or 4 projects over the years that have been able to tap into those Lasard Sams funding. And with all the plans that are out there right now, there's a lot of plans and different groups that are calling for different actions to store water on the landscape. we really feel like we can play a positive role in helping all those different agencies and entities and groups focus on how do we do multi-purpose projects and still include flood damage reduction and then the habitat features and water quality. But ultimately, when we look at the work we're doing, it's also about protecting economic vitality in the rural areas. I know some of the previous speakers touched on that a little bit. In 2019, when we look at that, we had a pretty major flood in the spring. But then going into the fall, we had severe flooding up in the Roseau River Watershed District. One of the fact sheets there on the backside has some pictures of flooding up in the Red River Basin. And with the sugar beet industry up there, there was about 118,000 acres that were not harvested, and that was a major economic impact. The potato industry also, from what I understand, they suffered a $45 million loss. And earlier, one of the speakers had mentioned, too, the disruption of services. And as an example, there's a city, smaller city, north of East Grand Forks called Oslo. And when there's major flooding in the spring, they can only get in there by boat for about 24 to 30 days. So it gets to be a long time for them to be going back and forth by boat and other means. And so it's really about some of these commerce issues that we've been talking about. And then with our projects too, we're not saying that we're going to store every drop of water, but our projects can reduce and lessen those downstream impacts by holding some of those flood peaks and then by allowing that water to be released at the appropriate time to lessen those impacts. Right now across the state, according to the DNR's most current list of funding hazard mitigation grant needs, there's about $438 million on that list. That includes several city and urban projects across the state, and it also includes watershed district projects across the state. And so there's definitely a need there, and I guess the key is, in all the work that we're doing, a stable funding source is definitely needed as we move forward to deal with precipitation and increasing precipitation, some of the storm events that we're dealing with, and so forth.
Thank you, Mr. Sipp. Questions for Mr. Sipp? Any comments, Representative Torkelson?
Of course. Well, thank you, Chair Fisher. Mr. Sipp points out a very important aspect of this in Minnesota, and that's in some places we have watershed districts, in other places we don't. And that has, while they have a well-developed kind of system there in the Red River Valley, we don't have that same system in other parts of the state. And as we do our work in this area, it's going to be important that we somehow figure out, along with Representative Sundin's funding question, also this governance question. You have watershed districts which are unelected but have taxing authority, and you have soil and water conservation districts whose supervisors are elected but do not have taxing authority. So we have this kind of very interesting mix of jurisdiction and styles of working, but we all kind of have the same goal, and that's to get good work done on the ground. So as we move forward, I'm hoping we can consider that as one of the topics that may be of interest.
Thank you, Representative Torkelson. I would agree with you. I've seen some of those same dynamics as who has taxing authority and who doesn't. And because we don't have one group that does it throughout the entire state, there's some holes. So you've got some challenges as you're out there pulling this together. I appreciate the work that you're doing on it. With that, let's move on to our next testifier, Ms. Becker-Kadelka. Ms. Becker-Kadelka, if you'd like to introduce yourself and start your testimony, please.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. Angie Becker-Kadelka, Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Mr. Chair and members, thank you to the author and to you, the chair, and others for your leadership on this bill. The administration does agree with this need and with the policy and with the author's assessment that we must find ways to better handle water events and the corresponding need for storage. This bill begins a conversation. It's designed to support a broad array of practices and projects to store water on the land, to prevent water quality degradation, to create infrastructure protection for streams and rivers that are affected by these increased flow volumes and rates. We all know that an effective approach is going to require a wide variety of tactics and approaches. And so Ms. Buck shared some of them, that the soil and water districts remain critical to being able to provide programs and practices on the ground and in the areas where storing water makes makes a lot of sense. There's other approaches as well that may include smaller and dispersed temporary water storage systems, such as within drainage right-of-ways that might be managed by, let's say, a county or a watershed district, temporary holding ponds in neighborhoods, maybe even road right-of-ways, such as including those that have well thought out designs as not to compromise public road infrastructures. All of these could go a long way in cutting down what we're all worried about, which is water flow rates and thus erosion. Temporary systems are especially important in those areas, as the author suggested, which is those areas that are farmed where drainage is necessary and where permanent holding of water, maybe via wetland restoration, just doesn't make sense, is not feasible or logical. So this bill builds off the work of the committee in past of the coordinated water management, and we stand ready to work with the authors to continue working on this policy to find solutions as we move ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Becker-Kadelka. Any questions for Ms. Becker-Kadelka? Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and for both the Representative Torkelson and Ms. Becker-Kadelka. I live in the southeast metro area in Woodbury, and we're between the St. Croix and the Mississippi River. Imagine our stormwater runoff goes primarily to the Mississippi, but I'm not sure of that. I do know, however, that development is really brisk in that part of the city, in that part of the area, not only in Woodbury, but in Cottage Grove as well, and to some extent in Newport and elsewhere. And there's less agricultural land almost by the week in Woodbury. But we have a growing stormwater runoff issue. As more homes are built, more roads are built, and the roads that are there are expanded, the city has looked for ways to store water or handle stormwater runoff. One way they're doing it is directing stormwater into what they call a biofiltration system. I've had some discussions with constituents about the wisdom of that. Are you familiar with that kind of stormwater management, and what's your history with it?
Ms. Becker-Kadelka, would you like to try that one?
Mr. Chair and members, I think one of the things that I hear you referring to is one of the effects of increased rainfall events, and that how we've designed systems in the past, be it in developed areas or not, aren't able to handle maybe the rainfalls of today. And it's exactly what you're seeing, and exactly what one of the problems are in our water storage issues.
Representative Sandell.
When I first began talking with the city about the city and the county about this, I said I'd drive a lot on country roads in western Minnesota, and there it seems to be that stormwater runs off into the ditch and is handled in the ditch. And why can't that be done in areas of planned development? And their answer was that the ditches were too small, the water was too great, and their policy was try to take care of the stormwater closest to where it exists. But as development continues in our area, I just see this going to be a greater problem, and I just don't know. I'm learning about it and just looking for more advice on it, I guess. Can you give any advice there?
Or
just where I might go.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members, I think one of the components of who's responsible for the development and what are those laws, those land use authorities in that particular area. And so we know right now that in urban areas, land use authorities do require there to be water storage infrastructure that's built into new development. And I think what you're talking about is one of those perennial issues that I wish that there was a solution for, and what I think this bill starts to address, which is how do we handle the fact that our weather systems and our weather patterns don't always meet those very demands that have been put onto those systems. And so one of the options that we see as being a viable option is to start taking a step back up further into the watershed. And if we can start slowing things down up further in the watershed, that by the time it starts hitting more and more developed areas, then the infrastructure that's been put in place there might still be able to work and might still be able to handle that amount of, let's say, rainfall or flow that's going through the system. And so one of the approaches is to take a step back and to look upstream and to say, okay, if we can start slowing the water up here, by the time then that it hits some of these areas, it's going to have less flow going through it. And, you know, and it's a big issue, and it's a big problem, quite frankly.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Sandell. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Representative Fisher, Mr. Chair. In addition to that, I think it's really important that these features on the landscape, where it's feasible, have a, what I would call a lot of bounce, in that they release the water at a reasonable rate so that when the next rainfall event comes along, they have the capacity to fill back up again. If you build features on the landscape that are designed to hold a large amount of water constantly, you don't get that bounce, so you don't have that capacity in those features to absorb a major rainfall. So that drain and refill cycle is really important to the success of something like this.
Thank you.
Representative Heintzman.
Just an observation, Mr. Chair. I did a little Googling as we've been talking about this issue, and I think that there's a chance, actually it's probably likely, that you and I may likely down the road be having to talk about making sure that we build infrastructure to a level that can handle capacity like we're seeing today. Wasn't that long ago, I was a watershed district manager back in Brainerd, and one of the big conversations with designers was making sure that they were building the infrastructure large enough. And part of that reason is because we had just kind of come through a dry stretch, and then there's this sort of interest in maybe reducing the size of those pieces of infrastructure. So we might be having this conversation kind of the other way around in a decade. You never know. It just seems like these weather systems are cyclical to some extent, and over time you're going to see differences in the weather. There's no question that climate does change decade to decade. So maybe I'll remind you, or you can bring this up in about it. I don't know, five, 10 years.
Well, thank you for that, Representative Heintzman. And I think that's where Representative Torkelson is spot on, is that we've got to have features out there that can accommodate the bounce that's going up and down, because, you know, we're kind of in a wet cycle, we'll end up in a dry cycle at a certain point. But the one thing we do know is that whether we're in a wet cycle or a dry cycle, that when the rains come, they're probably going to be less frequent but more intense. And that's what kind of haunts us a little bit, is that's what we're seeing on the lands. And it's trying to catch that intensity and then holding it back as much as possible and then slowly releasing it going forward. And there may be times where some of these structures might see periods where they don't have as much water flowing into them or through them when we hit a drought-type situation. But it's really critical that when we've got the intensities that we do now, and particularly when you're dealing with the different water systems that we have here, is in the impact that this can have, say, in the Minnesota, where you've got a young river valley slowly carving its way out, is going to have much more impact than in most parts, not all parts, but most parts of, say, the Mississippi River. And likewise, in the metro area, because of how much we've developed, we've taken into account where we've got standards that were old standards, and now we're finding that those things that were built for 100-year standards are good for maybe something that's happening every 5 or 10 years. And that makes it much more challenged as we come back in, is how do we accommodate the landscape when we've got these high cycles that come through. And that's what I appreciate with the work that that Representative Torkelson is taking a look at, not only the Minnesota River, but how do we do this across the entire state, whether it's in the metropolitan areas or in the rural areas. Other questions or comments that people may have at this point in time? Hearing none, I want to just double check, is there anyone else out in the audience that has not testified yet that would like to testify, if they'd like to come up at this point in time and identify themselves?
Good afternoon. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Lance Ness. I'm the president of the Minnesota Conservation Federation, Anglers for Habitat, and the Fish and Wildlife Alliance. We want to thank Representative Torkelson for bringing this forward, and we really appreciate his work. I also want to thank Mr. Sparlin for his hard work. He's had me down both through the New Ulm Sports Club and the Nicollet Conservation Club to discuss this, and we are in strong support of it. I'll just make a quick comment, and I'll get out of your way here. Minnesota is what I call water wealthy. We all have lots of water. All water flows out of Minnesota. No water flows into Minnesota. We all drain water. We drain it with impunity. And we treat our water as if it was a curse instead of an asset. In 1991, Governor Carlson vowed to make the Minnesota River swimmable and fishable. Didn't happen. We all contribute to drainage. We need to help find a solution. We want to thank Representative Torkelson. We want to ask you to please find the funds for this project. It's very important. Thank you.
Welcome. Thank you, Mr. Ness. Any comments or questions for Mr. Ness? Thank you very much. Seeing no other questions or comments, I will turn it over to the author, Representative Torkelson, for final comments.
Well, Mr. Chair, we haven't used all of our allotted time up. I don't know if I can.
That's okay. All right, because we're going to come back to this.
Just a few quick comments at the end. This issue is going to come back, and we'll discuss it some more when we have some more detailed amendments in place. Just a couple things I should mention. First, I should mention that Governor Carlson was not the first politician to overpromise and underdeliver. Happens to most of us somewhere along the line. This effort does have some drawbacks. We have to be careful where we store water. The issue of saturated riverbanks is a real problem that contributes to the sloughing of riverbanks. If you store this water in a situation where it's going to saturate a riverbank beyond what it can handle, you're going to see those bluffs slough into the river. So you can't store water everywhere. That's again where the temporary feature of this may be helpful. And what we really don't know, Mr. Chair and members, is can we do enough to make a difference? We can do enough to make a difference in the drought year, excuse me, but can we do enough to make a difference in a wet year? Honestly, I don't think we really know. And that's part of why we need to do some pilots here to get a better understanding of what's possible. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your attention today, and I look forward to discussing this more in the future.
You're welcome, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson renews his motion to have House File 3595 laid over for future consideration. Thank you. And then that is the last item on the agenda. We will be, just as a heads up, we will be having a number of bills starting to come to us over the next couple weeks as the Subcommittee of Water has their bills all coming into introductions. Probably today, from my understanding, is when most of them will start hitting. So we'll start having a fuller plate as other bills start moving through too. Thank you all, and we are adjourned.